it's common to debate the influence God and religion has played in American history and politics. But what about America's influence on God? Has America changed God? Our guest this hour says yes. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest has explored America's religious history and says our country has played a significant role in how God is portrayed and seen nationally and even globally. And we will talk about how America has changed God. And we will also ask, does God control the future of America, or is it the other way around? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show if you would like to join in our conversation. Matthew Paul Turner is a writer, blogger, speaker. He is the author of more than a dozen books about religion and culture, including Churched, The Christian Culture Survival Guide, and Hear No Evil. And his most recent book is Our Great Big American God, A Short History of Our Ever-Changing God. Good morning.
It's nice to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much. Do you mind telling us your personal religious background?
I grew up in Christianity. I was raised in independent fundamentalism, a very conservative sect of the Baptist Church, and now I'm a Christian. I follow Jesus. So
okay, all right. And why did you decide to look into the history of I guess our great big American God?
Because I like so many Americans, am frustrated with how evangelicalism has kind of taken over the story of God and made it political and made it into this you know, anti this and anti that and made it into something that it was never meant to be. I don't believe, and I just sort of I was reading and researching a few years ago about the Puritan story and how they, you know, and how their view of God or their perceptions of God changed even before they got here, and I started becoming curious about how it had changed, you know, after the Puritans. Mm-hmm. And so I started researching and, you know, found this very interesting narrative and this trend of Americans, you know, being very loose and very creative in their engagement of the Almighty.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about your frustration with evangelicals taking over, you know, religion or God, changing God.
Well, we've made evangelicalism this social war between, you know, this social war against marriage equality, this social war against immigration, this social war against, you know, a variety of really big issues that are very divisive in our nation, and we've inserted Jesus and God into these wars, and I mean both sides do it, but evangelicalism is, you know, of course the, you know, it's the force that this big God force that in American politics that has, you know, become bigger, and, you know, sometimes it shrinks down at certain elections, but, you know, it started in the late 70s and sort of grew in the 80s and became a huge force in the mid 90s, and of course, you know, we've seen the effects of this idea, you know, in the last in this, you know, current century, and so we, as you know, as a progressive Christian, I become frustrated when, you know, the teachings of Christ get ignored in favor of just taking sides on issues that don't really have that Jesus never talked about.
Yeah, well, your title refers to God as ever changing in our country. Give us the short course, the very short course. How much did God change over the course of America's history?
Well, I mean, I mean a good bit, honestly. But and again, we're talking. I'm talking specifically about the Christianity's God. Just want to make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Puritans came over with a very Calvinistic, Reformed idea of God, this idea that God predestined people to heaven or to hell, this idea that God was in, that God was sovereign, that God was in control of everything, and that men and women were depraved, meaning they were incapable of doing anything good outside of God being involved. And so that was the Puritans' view of God. And now we have while Reformed theology is certainly still around in the States, it has evolved into a very non-Reformed understanding of God, an understanding of God that is very individualistic, that God has a plan for you, and that God wants to bless you, that God has this grandiose thing that he wants exactly for you, that he plucked you out of, you know, out of nowhere and is going to put you, you know, on this divine path. And there are various, I mean, you know, we have the Pentecostal movement, we have that that was birthed out of the, you know, out of the early 20th century. And, you know, we have churches in California that, you know, look to God and, you know, during worship services and claim that gold dust falls from the sky during worship services. And so when you look at history, you see this narrative of God morphing from this very control-oriented, hell-obsessed deity to this more Jesus-focused, you know, this more biblical-based idea that, you know, was on both sides of the issue of slavery, that then in the late 19th century turned into this dispensational God, that this God that was that had split the universe up into unique divisions of time, and, you know, create, and this, and God, he was sending Jesus back to rescue all born again Christians in this idea called the rapture. And this, you know, what many people don't realize is that the rapture, this idea that really has defined evangelicalism over the course of the, you know, last 100 years, it's only 145 years old. It's a relatively new idea in Christendom, and especially American Christendom. And so, and it took off, and it affected everything, and it affected how we saw the war. It affected how we saw the evolution being taught in schools. It affected how we would consider the end times and consume ourselves with the end.
Yeah. So how do we perceive, what God are we perceiving today?
Well, I mean, I think that everyone perceives their own version of God, honestly. I mean, certainly there is this, your basic evangelical perspective about God, but, you know, you can't, perceptions is like, you can't control people's perceptions. And so Christianity's versions of God are quite unique and quite varied in their options. So it's not like that we came over with this Calvinistic version of God with the Puritans nearly 400 years ago. But it is God has morphed into a new, like a variety of ideas. It's not and a variety of Christian ideas, and it's not simply just one thing.
Yeah, but so what person or event from our history influenced American perception of God the most?
Well, I'll be honest. I think that the popularizing of the rapture in the late 19th century definitely affected probably American religion more than anything, because it was something like this idea that Jesus was coming back to rescue us, and that we had to make sure that everyone heard about the good news prior to Jesus coming back, and we didn't know when Jesus was coming back, so the anticipation was huge, and there was lots of fear involved, and it was like we were always on the edge of our seats waiting for the Savior to return. And so that made it possible for us to kind of weave our religion into every aspect of life, from relationships to our how we approach psychology, how we approach the our foreign affairs, and it became us against them, and it was very much this: we win because we have Jesus coming back to rescue us. And so our religion became a very easily weaved into the most aspects of our, of our culture here in America. You know, everything from our views about, Israel to our views on this idea of helping the poor, or this, our ideas about socialism, or our fear of socialism, even just the word.
Yeah. Well, talk some about the trends or changes in American Christianity in recent times.
Well, in recent times, we've seen these many parts about God. Starting in the late 70s, like I said, we had these forces: the Pentecostal God, the fundamentalist God, the evangelical God, and the more mainline, the mainstream God of Catholics and Episcopalians. We had these gods sort of merge on some level, especially the Pentecostal, the fundamentalist, and the evangelical views, and really these ideas became, or these ideas of God became synonymous under the world, the idea of politics. I mean, Jerry Falwell kind of brought these ideas together, which was unheard of, because Jerry Falwell was a core Baptist fundamentalist, a guy who was very well respected, very well known among the most conservative of the conservative in the Christian movement of his time. And the idea that he was having meetings with Pentecostals or meetings with Catholics and starting to dream up a plan to morph his religion into this political movement, it became very controversial, and he was shunned by so many in his circle. And it was as much as Jerry Falwell is considered a divisive figure in the grand culture, he was actually, in many ways, he was a uniter in his own culture, because he united these concepts of God into this force that really became a defining part of the 1980s. And though the moral majority, the group that he developed, it didn't last a little more than a decade, it gave evangelicals this clear vision of what was possible, which then turned into the growth of evangelicalism in politics in the 1990s, by the time George W. Bush was running for president in 2000, he was this idea of compassionate conservatism. Was like the language used in his that rhetoric was laced with these evangelical hints, these moments of where he pays homage to scripture or to the words of Jesus, and it was something that he never really forced, in the sense of he never pointed out that this was a biblical reference, but evangelicals knew, and it was sort of like a wink, wink to the people who believed, and though it's George W. Bush didn't necessarily win his election, he became president.
Let me take a short pause. We are talking with Matthew Paul Turner. He's a writer, a blogger, a speaker. His most recent book is Our Great Big American God. And Matthew, let me get you to clarify the subtitle of the book. I have two different ones. Is it a short history of our ever-growing deity?
Yes, it is our it is a short history of our ever-growing deity. Yes.
Well, we'll talk about that ever-growing deity in just a moment. We'll welcome your questions and your views on this. Do you agree with our guest's analysis of America's influence on God? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Matthew Paul Turner. He is the author of Our Great Big American God, a short history of our ever-growing deity. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that. I see polls and studies and statistics that show that church attendance is on the decline in America, that more people are calling themselves secular or agnostic. Is religion ever growing right now? Is God ever growing?
When I refer to this ever growing God, I'm not necessarily referring to the popularity of God or the worship of God as much as I am the idea of God, the concepts that that people use to engage the story of God to a group of people. It keeps expanding. New ideas keep adding to this concept. From a very individualistic, economic-focused God who offers grandiose prosperity to people who give to this God who is ever evolving into the effects of how we interact with people who disagree with us. And so these ideas, the ideas of how people engage God keep growing. And it's one of those things that is, it's hard to point out how that is happening today. Looking at it from a macro standpoint, you can see how America has used God in various aspects to extend the patriotic Americanisms that we have needed. We needed at that time when God, in the early stages of as America, was considering going into World War I, the church became it became the PR campaign for us to enter that war. And for good or bad, that was, I don't want to suggest that we made a bad decision. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that we used God's story to deliver the message to the people. And that was something that, while God had been used in previous centuries to promote the idea of war or conflict, this was new for America in many ways.
Let's take some calls. Mike in Fond du Lac is with us. Hello, Mike.
Good morning. My first thoughts were going to be about the difference between a belief and a fact, that all people can have beliefs and you can't say they're true or false, but everyone's entitled to a belief versus a fact, which can be proven. But as you were talking, I started thinking about the deity of a one God. And many cultures, particularly Native Americans, had multiple gods, which is why I think part of the religious dogma back in the days of Columbus was that they were considered savages because they had multiple gods. And yet, I think it all boils down to three words. Whenever I talk to someone who tends to be somewhat of a biblical fundamentalist, I tell them that the entire Bible can be summed up in three words, that God is love. And when you start with that premise and your actions follow that, everything falls into place. And I think that's a concept that all religions share, hopefully, that their God is a loving God rather than a hateful or a vengeful God.
Thank you very much, Mike. A reaction to that, Matthew?
I think he makes a great point. I think that I think that there are certain sects in Christianity who have gone out of their way to make God not into a loving God, make God into a vengeful God, a God who is hell-bent on tormenting or hell-bent on, you know, vengeance in the end. I think they have gone out of their way to spiritually manipulate the word love into something that requires this eternal spiritual justice that that God must go through or must, you know, enforce. And I think that we have we've gotten away for many evangelicals or for many fundamentalists to just say that God is love is a very empty idea, and which is sad. And so I thought that he made a very good point.
Yeah. So how about this so-called church, Westboro Church, that protests at army and soldiers'
right,
funerals.
At funerals and every chance. Like they are the PR. They are PR professionals, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they actually have the signs. God hates
right.
certain people, and how do they play into this? You know, this your book.
Well, you know, they are one more thread in the story. They you know, in reality, they are a very small segment of evangelicalism. The people who most Christians probably would disagree with them and their tactics. However, if you were to go into the theological background, like the actual views that drive their message, that those messages would be shared by a much larger audience. They just wouldn't go about it the same way. They would not put it on signs. They would not go and, you know, picket funerals and use it as a way to actively hate somebody. But they don't think that God hates fill in the blank necessarily, but they would say that judgment would be coming, a part of that person, fill in the blank, the end of the story, that God would judge them. And you could debate, we could debate all day long whether that's hate, love, somewhere in between.
Yeah, and what about those, the TV preachers who, I'm trying to remember now, who would say things like Hurricane Katrina was God punishing our immoral lifestyles?
Yeah, no, I mean there is there's a preacher in Minneapolis who's very popular by the name of John Piper, and certainly he went during there was a gathering of Lutherans who were voting on whether or not to ordain gay and lesbian priests in their church, and a tornado came through the city at that point, and he declared that was God's sign, you know. And so that was, you know, we are constantly going about filling in the blanks on God's behalf, like using what happens in everyday as a way to communicate the story of God, to morph it into how we understand God, and then we use it as a narrative to sell God, to make people believe that God is, you know, that God is true, that God is real, that their version of God is the true version of God. That's a very common concept and something that really we have no idea. And the fact that we so adamantly, with such certainty, declare those things is a disservice to God.
We are talking with Matthew Paul Turner, author of Our Great Big American God, A Short History of Our Ever-Growing Deity, welcoming your comments, your questions for him, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Victor in West Allis. Hi, Victor. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I love your program. Hey, this is a quick bio, and then I'll get to the question. Some years ago, I was watching Pat Robertson, came across the station. He was talking about how they were trying to get through their college accreditation for law. recognition. So when a person gets a degree in the law, they can perform, you know, the duty of a lawyer. But their goal is to infiltrate the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court, because right now that's a thorn in their side. And I was wondering, will they ever succeed in doing something? Says it's going to be a long-range 50-year program, but they think they may succeed.
And I'm sorry, I don't understand, Victor. They may succeed in doing what?
Well, infiltrating the Court of Appeals, you know, putting their own people in there that have gone through their colleges, and to the Supreme Court. Remember, the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court always seems to be overruling their right to pray in school and stuff like this.
Oh, I see. So we, is that underway, trying to stack the courts with, I don't know, evangelical?
Conservative judges.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that Christians have been doing since the, again, the 80s, the 70s and 80s, when this war on socialism, this war against, I'm trying to think of the exact word, but it was this war against secularism, if you will, that you know the Christians kind of engaged in, and that secularism, you know, became the war against abortion, the war against gay rights, the war against evolution being taught in education. There were a variety of things that, and on the flip side, it was the support of the Star Wars plan, the support of these conservative ideas that were, economically focused, making America the center of the universe focused, and very much this individualistic that we, again, this idea, this manifest destiny, a morphed concept of manifest destiny, but this idea that the Puritans brought over with them, that their path forward, that what they were doing, like what they were about to establish in Boston, was going to become the focus of Christianity. The focus that God's story was basically God was almost creating a new story built around them. And in many ways, that's how America throughout history has viewed itself and its ideas about God, is that we are the center point of God's story, and certainly that we put a big focus on Israel, but it is sort of, we have to be, if we're not involved, Israel's not going to be successful in their part.
Well, let's go to another call, Alan in Menasha. Hello, Alan.
Hi. I guess you're kind of touching on my point. The American exceptionalism and how people in politics hold that up as we're somehow better, to me, goes against everything that Jesus really was about.
Absolutely.
I don't understand how you can have that, how you can say that we're better than somebody else and still call yourself a Christian. I if you could just explain where they get that from and how do we combat that, because it just doesn't, and I'm not a Christian, and I just can't wrap my head around the whole thing. And I'll take your response off the air. Thank you.
Yep, thanks, Alan.
Well, I mean, I think that we're just, Christians have become very selective in what they present about Jesus as being something that they want to be known for. And this idea of exceptionalism, of being better than the rest of the world, again, is rooted in the concepts of the Puritans, and certainly was the leading force, leading into the 1700s that really empowered a group of people to consider that independence from Britain was their future, was something that they would aspire to. There was an evangelist by the name of George Whitefield who was really, many historians consider him to be America's first celebrity. He preached thousands and thousands of revivals. He had a different approach to God. He spoke outside. He used story. he made people laugh, but he was also the first person in America to really popularize this concept of being born again, and that a relationship with God brings liberty. And his popularity was like his career was centered in that, you know, the 1700s leading up to the revolution. He actually passed away before the revolution, but many believe that it was his message, because so many Americans, being born again was the first common thread that people from Maryland, people from Massachusetts, people from, you know, Georgia were beginning to say yes to this liberty, this idea that God had freed them from sin. And that was easily translated into this concept that God would free them from Britain, that liberty was not just a spiritual idea. It would become a national idea. And you know, when we developed the Constitution and we, you know, had the Declaration of Independence, there was this grandiose establishment, like there was this grandiose thinking that what we were doing was divine. That, you know, even though that God wasn't mentioned in our Constitution, there was a large number of people who believed he should have been and would believe that their path forward, that the American path forward, would be God's path forward.
Let me
and
bring
so
in
like
a,
that,
as, because it's very related to something that Dave in Menominee wanted to address. So let me bring him in. Dave,
okay.
In Menominee, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. Thank you. I'm a recovered Roman Catholic. I was educated in the Catholic school, and with my relationships with people that are still, you know, active in the church and active politically, I was prompted to bring up to call because of the way that your guest had brought together how the religious and political thing kind of morphed together, especially in the 90s. And so where we can go is how the founders thought of God at the time, because a lot of people that I talk to now believe, you know, that the framers were very right-wing, very conservative people, and
yeah.
They believe that that they have the same beliefs as the framers, and they have the same beliefs as Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you read like the Sermon on the Mount, it's very plain to see Jesus was literally a flaming liberal man. And even the framers, George Washington said, the United States is in no sense founded upon the Christian doctrine. Jefferson said, I do not find in Orthodox Christianity one redeeming feature. And, you know, the First Amendment, the very first line, the most important line, because it's the first line of the very First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. And when I bring this up to a lot of, you know, people, when they we talk about this, they absolutely go crazy when I bring up that First Amendment thing. I really believe they hate the First Amendment, want to change the First Amendment, want to change the Constitution.
Yeah, Dave, thanks very much, because you gave us a lot to talk about. But I thought he's kind of so were the founding fathers you know, right wing or very conservative in religious beliefs, or the other way around?
Look, the answer to probably the answer is really yes. In some way, there were certainly a number of people who wanted God to be inserted into the documents that defined America. But, you know, the people like Benjamin Franklin, people like Thomas Jefferson were enemies of that idea. I mean, Thomas Jefferson was like, the caller made a very interesting point, because there are so many evangelical conservatives who think that they are somehow like, I don't know, the patriotic descendants of Thomas Jefferson, and that his ideas were their ideas, and in reality, Thomas Jefferson had, you know, he was not a religious man. He was certainly infatuated with Jesus, but not the miraculous parts of Jesus. He was infatuated with the teachings of Jesus, like the morality, the good deeds, that, you know, the building of relationships and community, and Jesus and Jefferson, like, went out of his way to, you know, he created his own version of the Bible, like the Gospels, and took out all the miraculous parts of the Gospel stories and kind of edited it down to being a very human story about Jesus, and it, you know, it's called the Jefferson Bible, and if people and if Christians would read that and see what exactly Jefferson thought, they would probably be surprised. But they have been told that Jefferson is this born again Christian so many times by people they respect that it becomes a part of their culture, it becomes a part of their worldview, and it's hard to break through a faith-based worldview. It's hard to challenge it to some people, because it is, they think anything that would be challenging to it is it's evil, or it's of the devil, or it's, you know, something that they shouldn't engage because it's different.
We're talking with Matthew Paul Turner. He is the author of Our Great Big American God, A Short History of Our Ever-Growing Deity. And we welcome your questions or your views for him at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest who is the author of more than a dozen books about religion and culture. His most recent is Our Great Big American God, which looks at the influence of God and religion throughout American history, but also looks at the influence of America on God. Has America changed God? And we're talking about how our guest says we have. And many other callers. I'm going to go next to Joan in Milwaukee. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I've got one question and one comment. My question is, how many generations will it take to separate church and state in this country? Because hooking them up together is very evil, I think. And then a few callers ago, somebody implied that Native Americans had many gods. Uh-uh. They believed in one God, the Creator. And west of the Mississippi, the best word for God was the Great Mystery. And it was a monotheocratic idea. And we owe a lot to Native Americans for that.
All right, thank you, Joan. A comment on her question, how many generations will it take to separate church and state?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure that we are, I don't know if Americans, when we think about all Americans, I don't know if we can even imagine what the division between church and state would be like. We've morphed the concepts together in a variety of ways throughout history, and in the beginning it was, I think most of our founders, many of our founders believed that this separation of church and state was the idea that they didn't want the state, you know, involving itself in the church, since that concept wasn't reciprocated in the sense that the church was constantly reaching over into the state and trying to control ideas, we've mixed them together, and we have such a flawed perspective of what that even looks like that a real division that a real separation between church and state would be something that many Americans would vote for, yet they would not know exactly how that would go about. And then you have this other population who would not vote for it, and they would be afraid of what that would look like. Yeah.
What role, if any, do atheists play in the story of God in America?
Well, I mean, I think that now, today, atheists play a major role because they are telling, they are developing as a community of people. They are, writing lots of books, and they've always written books, but they've really developed a movement in lack of a better word, and they are telling the discrepancies of Christianity. They're becoming louder in their debate and reasons why they don't believe in God. And some of their reasons are quite good, and you can't get around them, and it's hard. And so I think that they're playing a role in the ongoing story. And whether or not they would say they are, I think they certainly have a that they would. They wouldn't be able to deny that they are in at least in part of it.
Let's go to another call. Gary in Ripon. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Perhaps we're going over old ground here, but I was wondering if the guest wanted to comment on the idea that I think a lot of people have, including people who aren't very Christian and never go to church, that America is God's chosen land and we're God's chosen people, that the founding fathers were God's infallible agents, and that, in essence, the U.S. of A. is God's agent on earth, and that therefore what we do both at home and abroad is what God would want done.
Yeah, no, what's interesting is that that idea was developed even before the Puritans left England. A guy by the name of the Reverend John Cotton, who actually wasn't joining the Puritans at that time to journey into the United States or journey to Boston, but he delivered a sermon called God's Promises to His Plantation. And it was a long, involved, very biblical text written prose about that very thing, that God was, he basically put the Puritan people in the story, that he took out the Israelites from the biblical story of the Old Testament, of many of them, and he inserted the Puritan people into those stories. And he imagined this grandiose narrative about what God had planned for this mighty forest, as he called it, that God was growing a mighty forest, and that if the Puritan people stayed true to what God wanted them to be true to, that God had a huge, huge destiny planned for them. And so that concept, while people have fought it, and certainly there have been, distractors from it, that has... It's sort of just a part of our idea, or many areas of our culture's idealism, and that somehow how we respond in the Middle East is somehow how God would respond. Especially, that concept grew as we, in the 1900s, because we are the 20th century, as we started to become the moral authority in battles and wars, we started to see ourselves as this group of people who would go into battle to save the world from evil. And so that concept was that superhero concept really grew, and really wasn't kind of, it didn't start to become questioned until the Vietnam War, when it didn't, that conflict didn't go as planned. And it really was an eye-opening experience for many. Yeah. And so, yeah, that is, while it's not, while you rarely hear that idea taught specifically as a doctrine, it's certainly laced in the general beliefs and ideas of many believers and non-believers.
John in Elgin is with us now. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. One thing that's always confused me since kindergarten and church, you know, Sunday school, is the growing power of what we call Christianity and the growing power of our military forces. And as you said, we use those that force around the world as a force of good. But the first commandment is thou shalt not kill. So if you follow at all the moral precepts of all of the religions, I mean, from around the world, it shouldn't be. It can't be. It's being used by governments, in my opinion, to control the masses and lead them into these conflicts. And these conflicts are definitely for, like after World War One, we divided up the Ottoman Empire according to oil fields. Who gets what oil field? And we're right now, okay, we're out of Iraq. But no, we have the biggest diplomatic headquarters. It's like a five-mile circle, green zone, they call it. And we have five air bases there. We're not out of Iraq. We're never going to be out of Iraq. And that's why we're supporting the Kirkuk up in the north that have that Kirkuk oil field.
John, thank you very much. We're running so short on time. Since we talked a little bit about this already, just kind of a few more remarks on how patriotism and religion got so wound together?
Well, I mean, again, I was just going to say that he makes a really great point about the idea of the military, members of our military being seen as almost angelic, and that started after World War One when the men started coming home from the war. You know, many churches developed publications and propaganda pieces that really kind of painted the American soldier as almost like a missionary. They had a rifle in one hand and they were holding a Bible underneath the other, and it was very much this angelic perspective that kind of started to shape America's perspective of the military and how we started to really just have a grandiose idea about our soldiers.
Yeah.
And certainly I value them, you know, value their place and value their role. I'm just saying that they aren't angels, you know.
So at the end of the book, you predict that God will continue to grow in America or evolve.
Sure.
In what ways? And we only have a minute, so very briefly, do you see God growing in the future?
I mean, I think that God will continue to become involved in miraculous healings. I think the Pentecostal movement is probably the place to view the biggest changes in the future, because they are the fastest growing Christian denomination in the world. So watch the Pentecostalism, and you will definitely see the idea of God develop.
Interesting. And we still have a tiny bit of time. What is the takeaway from your book? What do you want readers to take away?
I want people to see the story, see the narrative. Let them wrestle with the idea how have we involved and reached our hand into God's story and used it for our own purposes? And what does that mean for how we view the world today? Maybe if we were to consider how our views today might affect God 20 years from now, that maybe we would be less dogmatic and less, you know, less certain about what we are preaching today, and that we would, you know, ask questions and let doubt be a part of the faith conversation more often.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Matthew Paul Turner, writer, blogger, speaker. His most recent book is Our Great Big American God, A Short History of Our Ever-Growing Deity. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing the program. Thanks to Justin Williams for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Coming up tomorrow at this time, by the way, we will talk with the author of Politics is a Joke, How TV Comedians Are Remaking Political Life. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.